Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you love me, please don't judge me. Got my hands tied, the power's above me. Don't shoot the messenger, I'm just a puppet here. If you wanna place blame, then look to the puppeteer. Family, fortune, envy, jealousy, privilege, passed on, legacy, secret, sabotage, borderline, felony, suicide, subtract, selfish.
Welcome to another episode of Machiavellian Fucks, our Succession Roycast, where we like to be liked. I'm Jason Madison, alongside Nando Vila, Captain My Captain, who is so hard to riff with.
We're just riffing here. Did you guys catch that there was two different characters use that, you know?
Yeah.
Tom used that. He's like, hey, you're so hard to riff with. But then Kendall says it a little later in the episode where he's like, yeah, I'm just riffing with Adrian Brody about like where to take Waystar Royko. Two references to riff.
Yep. Yeah, no, that was my favorite scene though. Tom and Greg.
Nero and Sporus.
Yeah.
Nando, are you more of a Nero? Are you more of a Sporus?
That, what the fuck was that scene? Like, what was going on there? I mean, it just takes so much balls to write. I mean, it must be so fun to write Tom just having this absolute meltdown and no one notices. You know, like literally no one's noticing it. And he's just like coming apart at the seams at every fucking level. But yeah, he's like, and then he castrated him and made him his like wife. He's like, I would love to castrate
you. Castrate you. And it's like,
talking about,
Greg gets it though. You know, Greg sees the shift in power and he sees, you know, how his position and Tom's position is switching right before his eyes. And Greg is kind of like pushing back on Tom now, you know, physically and metaphorically. He's like, yeah, I don't get what you're talking about. And like, get the fuck out of my office. I'm about to take this to the next level.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But I do feel bad for Tom. I don't know why, but
He's too online. Dude, you need to unplug. Like, he's getting way ahead of it. He's building this prison sentence up in his head that might not, probably won't even happen. That's what everybody's telling him. Like, don't trip on this. Like, just let it go. But, yeah, he's researching bunks. He's thinking about toilet wine. He's buying books for prison. Then he's reading them in advance because he can't even wait. But I love the dynamic. And it's funnier, even funnier coming from Tom. I love the dynamic between Greg and his granddad, where his granddad's always referencing shit that he doesn't understand, like Tacitus. And Tacitus is actually contemporary to Nero and Sporus. So now we've got another character coming out of the woodwork on Greg here. And he's not familiar with the IP, guys. He's not all caught up on that stuff.
Oh my God. That line made me laugh so much. Like, I'm not familiar with this IP. And Tom, what's the name of the actor who plays Tom Wamsgans?
Matthew McFadden.
Matthew McFadden. The only other thing I've ever seen him in was in the pilot episode of The Last Kingdom. But that dude is incredible. I mean, the reason why, Jason, you feel bad for Tom is just straight up because of that dude's performance. Because Tom has not done a good thing ever, you know, in the show. But he so imbues his character with the kind of... he's in a prison, right, of his own making. Like, he might go to prison, but in, you know, metaphorically, he's already in prison. A prison that he built for himself. And he looks at Greg and he sees probably himself before he made a bunch of life choices, you know, a bunch of life choices that said that he will do whatever it takes. He will eat whatever shit it takes to ascend some vague corporate ladder, which he doesn't even really want to get to the top of, you know. He doesn't want to be CEO of Raystar Royco. He's already the president of one of the most powerful networks in the country. And he can't seem to just say, like, okay, this is my place right here. I'm fine with this. But he also can't seem to establish himself as a potential threat for CEO. And he's just kind of stuck.
I mean, I think he could, but like you said, he doesn't actually want to do that. And that's the thing about Tom is that he's not built to climb to the top. He's built to live exactly where he's at and to take shit from Shiv and Logan. You know, like, that's kind of what he's built for. And like, Greg realizes this now, you know, like, through his dealings with Tom. And Tom, just like you said, he lives in that prison. And basically, like, he's a dog in the cage and they give him a bone whenever they feel like it. But I mean, just the Ravenhead situation itself kind of explains Tom's whole, you know, issue with life. It's like, you're supposed to be the president, but your underlings won't even listen to you, you know. But all it takes is one correct sentence from Shiv, who basically cuts through all the bullshit when she's talking to him. Like, how many times are we going to say fuck to each other before you do what the fuck I say, basically? Wait, but
that wasn't the correct sentence. The correct sentence was like, this is what my dad wants.
Daddy said.
Right.
I said, do this.
Right.
I say jump, you say how high.
Right. Yeah. And she's like, look, we write your check at the end of the day. Don't bullshit me, you know. The only reason I keyed in on that sentence is because he was about to go into his kicking and screaming match. Hey, you're just a figurehead for Logan. Unless he tells me, I'm not listening to you motherfuckers. But, you know, she definitely was like, no, you're not going to talk to my dad. This is what he said. And you're going to listen to it from me, you know. And he seemingly did, right? Obviously, later in the episode, Logan gets his moment of joy after his slight heart attack or whatever he had happened to him on that trail, where he's showing his assistant, like, you want to hear the president pissed off? Like, look what I did, you know? Tom, he's where he's going to be. I don't really see him going to prison, because it seems like something he's manifested in his mind so much that it's almost impossible for it to actually happen now. But we'll see how they play it out.
No, I mean, I think what they're building up for, I think pretty clearly, is that he's going to turn, you know, that he's just going to get tired of eating shit, and that Shiv just being not mean to him, just completely like ignoring him, you know, and she just like does not give a shit that he has to go to prison.
There's that moment that I thought was so important when he's talking about how there's no wine in prison, which he just realized today.
Right.
But she leans over to console him for a half second and then immediately pulls it back because some random person's walking outside and she doesn't want to be seen. She wants to be seen as professional. And that's why husband and wives shouldn't work together, but also just you feel really bad for Tom. It's like, can you just hold his hand maybe?
Yeah. Like, I don't know what to say to you, you know? And she, what, like, even like whatever episode two or whatever the, it was when, or three last episode, I don't remember when Tom was like, well, maybe I can do it. She's like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. You should do it. Mm-hmm. You know? And he was like, he was probably expecting her like, no, honey, we'll fight, you know, like we're in this together, blah, 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 blah. You know, like stand by him. So he's like, no, actually, it's a good idea. Yeah. Go to jail. That way I can just like, you know, bang the Bernie bro whenever I want.
Exactly. Yeah. Her whole thing is like, look, I'm trying to knock off Kendall, get my dad to finally respect me. And Tom, you are just a rook on my chessboard. And when I need to dispose of you for, you know, anything, like, I'm ready for you to go, buddy. And it, like you said, they're building it up to it's seeming like him turning because it seems like such a blindside to everybody, right? Like, nobody, Logan or Shiv, or, I mean, obviously Kendall has already, you know, had a conversation with him about it. But other than that, like, nobody sees it coming, and it's kind of the obvious play for Tom. But I don't know. I see the season taking a lot of different turns before we get to Tom, you know, with in cuffs.
Totally. Well, I mean, it's the same thing with Greg, you know?
Yeah.
That you know, people kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not entirely sure he signed that piece of paper. Like, they don't show that.
Me neither. And I think that, like, Greg is dealing with the situation the opposite way that Tom is. And I think it's all, well, a large part of it is self-perception, right? Greg views himself as in the family and he's going to be able to make moves. And Tom still views himself as an outsider and someone who can be cast away easily. Now, I believe they don't have any extremely strong allegiance to Greg other than what he's, you know, made for himself the past couple of years. You know, obviously the show was telling us before it started, Greg was not in these people's orbit at all. They couldn't care if whether he lived or died. And so now that he's making his familial position whole weight and value, you know, in the company and now in their, you know, Machiavellian moves, I think that's all in Greg's doing. And Tom could be positioning himself in the same way, but he feels in his heart that he's an outsider and he won't ever be one of them. Yeah. Well, speaking of one of them, let's get to the meat and potatoes of the episode. We got a new character.
Or the clams of the episode, because that's the entree this week.
Yeah, the clams and the lobster shells of this episode. How many layers did Adrian Brody have on?
Five.
Was it five?
Yeah. It was four jackets. And maybe he has a couple t-shirts under there.
Yeah, I was going to say, he might have a t-shirt, a thermal, a jacket, a vest, a hoodie. He was
in what's apparently hot sun. That can cause heat exhaustion. He is so slender that he needs to stay bundled up on his.
That was another thing. I was looking at Logan. Logan had on 10 layers.
Yeah. Well, and then Adrian Brody's like daughter who is supposedly sick. Was she naked when she jumped into the pool?
No.
It was like a nude. Bathing suit.
Okay.
Yeah. It had to be.
Whatever. The point is that she's just taking a dip in the pool. You know, you know, in lovely, crisp, 40-degree weather. How cold does it have to be to wear all those layers and not be just sweating your balls off?
Yeah, I don't know. But the pool had to be heated, right? We know that.
Of course, yeah.
Adrian Brody, shady character. Shady, bro. He's up to stuff.
I loved him. I loved his whole little introduction, the literary, you know, verses he was dropping and his disdain for Kendall and his plan. That was my second favorite part of the episode when he basically broke Kendall's shitty plan down to him. He was like, so if you're right and your dad's a piece of shit, then I need to get out. If you're not and everything is cool, then you're an idiot. Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, it's obviously an open question as to whether Adrian Brody was ever, was whether he was even persuadable, but like assuming he was, right? Like assuming
he
it
was
wasn't
persuadable
just
if they had come in and sold him, which Kendall right. was very uncommitted to doing and right. couldn't seem to care less.
Right. And when Kendall thought he did that power move by leaving the tarmac early because, you know, he was so focused on his dad, he was probably gave away the game right there. Like it was probably over before it even began by that. You know, the fact that, I mean, if they were like, fine, why wouldn't they travel together to wherever the fuck this island was? Because the geography also is a little weird.
He's somewhere in Boston.
Yeah, it looks like Martha's Vineyard type of.
It is Montauk. That's where they shot the episode. That's where the house, the $50 million house is. But it's supposed to be somewhere near Martha's Vineyard, some private island.
Okay. So that it makes sense to take a plane and not right. and not just a helicopter.
From exactly.
Okay. So, but the fact that they would take two separate planes and not come together just already tells you enough that you, as much as you need to know that they're not together, that they're not aligned. So what he's saying is, he's like, I don't like to bet on blood feuds. You know, and as much as they can say, you know, like, yeah, we love each other. This is great. You know, we're going to be fine. The fact that they're just already coming in separate probably already told him everything he needed to know.
Plus, he says he's got guests coming later and we find out that that's Stewie and the whole bullshit with the daughter, the whole bullshit with the carts. I feel like he was playing them, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know at what moment that they could have arrived and presented a cogent argument that he would have agreed to and canceled his lunch with Stewie. It seemed like he just wanted to see it for himself and, you know, play his little billionaire game the same way that Logan plays his. And he had Logan in a spot where he had to agree to come see him. And so that was his fun for the afternoon. That's what it seems like to me, you know, and Kendall, that's also, it starts to show all of his flaws and show how many steps back from the game that he really is. You know, like, yes, you know, him and his dad get into a little shouting match at the end or whatever, but he's lost so many points up until that point. You know, like, obviously when his dad talks about him being paranoid because he starts accusing Josh of being on his dad's side and his dad's like, yo, bro, like, chill, like, for real. Like,
the thing is, at the same time, I think Logan realized that Kendall is probably the only one, as much as he hates him. You know, because the crucial moment to me, and it kind of seemed like a throwaway scene at first, but it's not the first time that this happens to Logan, is that he gets a phone call from one of his children, or he calls one of his children, and he's disappointed by them. And the crucial scene to me in the terms of the dynamics between the brothers is when he calls Shiv to chew her out for meddling with Carl's negotiation with Sandy and Stewie, you know? And she's like, well, what do you mean? You told me to. And he's like, no, I told you what I wanted, where I wanted this to go. The path there, I didn't tell you what to do and you fucked it up. And, you know, it just once again shows that like Shiv, for all her, outward self-confidence, obviously we know that she's not, because every time, you know, she panics every time that she needs to sort of take the reins. She's actually just a total incompetent because she's never worked in this. Like at the end of the day, the only kid who put in the work was Kendall. Like Kendall's been working at Waystar Royco, knows how it works. All the other ones are fucking just enjoyed their money in their own way and didn't actually work. Like Kendall did, for whatever reason, and he did not just sit back and just live a life of luxury and pleasure and social standing. He actually busted his ass in Waystar Royco. And I think in that moment, Brian Cox or Logan Roy realized that. And that's why when he was telling Adrian Brody's character, he's like, he's my son and I love him. And who knows, he's probably the best one of them all. He probably was in his own weird way sincere. You know, which doesn't mean that that is going to supersede the feud that he has with him, you know, and the sense of betrayal that he has with him. But he sort of realized in that moment that, you know, as the words were coming out of his mouth, like, holy shit, I think the only one here is Kendall and I'm feuding with him, you know, because I'm stuck with all the fucking shitheads on my side.
Right. And probably the realization that he put Kendall in this spot, right? Like, he's the one who gave up Kendall and made him make that decision. He's the one who put Kendall in a position to have to be given up by running his company the way that he did and letting all this shit go. And so, you know, like, he is the one who doesn't really want to take responsibility for any of the shit that he's done, right? Like, we've seen that over and over. And even though Kendall is in a way trying to clean up Logan's mess in reality, like, he's battling with him, trying to help him out. And that is played out so beautifully at the end when he has his little mini heart attack and his son is like, okay, dad, are you good? And he's like, fuck you. And he's like, all right, my, like, you know what I'm saying? All right, my nigga, I asked you if you was cool. Now you want to play that role like you too good to, like, take a seat. Like, we know that you're old, you know, like, just chill. And it's like, he doesn't have any chill. He's going to be a bull, a bear until his very last breath. And he doesn't give a fuck. And so that's what Kendall and the rest of them are going to have to deal with, right? And then Roman comes and just, like, plays his role and just piles on top of him like, oh, do you have a thing for nearly killing dad? like, come on, man. Like, I was out here trying to fucking help him. You're sitting there talking shit to Jerry. Like, you're not doing it.
The world is racing to get back to normal and start meeting up in person again. But after the year we've all had, getting back to feeling normal takes time. I don't know about you guys. I've been feeling overwhelmed, flustered, just avalanche, stuck under this avalanche of things I have to do and people I have to see and people I got to talk to, Zoom meetings and emails. Hell, even this ad that I'm recording right now, I forgot that I had to do it. I'm doing it from a computer that's not even mine. It's really tough to do all of this when you feel like you're trying to handle it all by yourself. Do you feel like that? If you're feeling overwhelmed by it all, guess what? You're not alone. It's important to find the support you need to face those feelings and move forward. We all talk to our friends when we're experiencing issues, but they don't always give us the advice we need. I mean, think about it. They can't really give us unbiased feedback because they're involved in many of our interactions and how we are. What you really need is advice from a licensed professional. It can be refreshing and rewarding. When you're in a low point, you might feel alone. But over 50% of Americans struggle with their mental health. We all need help sometimes, and asking for support when you need it is actually a sign of strength. Here's the idea. Use Talkspace. It's great. It's easy to use. It matches you with a licensed therapist and schedule live video sessions, all from the comfort of your device. You can start messaging your therapist the same day you sign up. The app makes it easy to connect with the therapist that is licensed and on your schedule without having to wait weeks before your next appointment. You can go anywhere and take your therapist with you. Whether you're a parent, student, millennial, or just someone having a hard day, Talkspace can provide the support to help you feel better with a single message. Talkspace offers individual and couples therapy in addition to medication prescription services. Set goals with your therapist, and they can help make sure you're really progressing. Talkspace therapists help you develop the tools to cope in difficult times. It works around your schedule at your convenience. Send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the app. Schedule live video sessions with your licensed therapist from anywhere. Whether you're experiencing depression, anxiety, or other problems, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue. Got thousands of licensed therapists available for you to match with, and they're experts in dozens of specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, and more to help you start feeling better. Start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code BOM. That's $100 off when you use the code BOM at Talkspace.com.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum-sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
The other thing that I loved about this episode, and it's something that Succession does so well, is that Logan Roy, who comes from like a different, like I've always mentioned, like a different class upbringing from his kids and from everyone around him, really, like literally everyone around him, at the upper echelons of U.S. corporate power, is the only one who talks straight, whereas everyone else talks in this kind of circuitous manner in which they can't just say the thing. They have to kind of dance around the thing endlessly until someone maybe gets the hint or not. And it's like the second or third time it happens in the season where like a character will be confronted with Logan Roy, and they'll try to like insinuate that they want a deal of something. And Logan like just drops all the pieces. Like, okay, like, yeah, just tell me what you want. Like the scene with Cousin Greg. He's like, just tell me what you want. He's like, you have a little leverage right now. I recognize that. Just tell me what you want. And Greg is like so taken aback because he's not prepared to just be like, I want this.
He wants to see the menu. You
exactly.
Know? He's not ready to order his own
future. With Adrian Brody when he was like, you know, like, oh, we'll take a walk and the thing and the, you know, oyster lunch on the cliff the thing, and he's just like, well, what do you know, he's just like talking around the thing, and Logan a couple times is like, listen man, like just tell me what you want, I'll see if I can give it to you, and then we can all fuck off and do whatever the fuck we want, like why are we wasting all this time,
right? After he sees that the daughter isn't really sick, he's yeah. like, well yeah. this is a fucking song and dance, I'm over
totally.
It
so how let's drop the pretense. Yeah, let's drop the pretense. Like I was actually with my cousin this week in Mexico, and he just got hired at an American consulting firm doing like big engineering projects or whatever. And he came from Spain. And he was like, dude, I'm just like so endlessly frustrated by like American corporate culture in which like they can never say the thing directly. And it's, you know, I don't want to sound like a fucking, you know, like right wing or anything like that, but there is some truth to like the quote unquote, like political correctness or like, you know, the sensitivity around, you know, gender issues, race issues that makes people very careful about what they say in a corporate setting. And that direct language or direct talk can be seen as too aggressive and, you know, might get you tarred as something, you know, something else. Whereas Logan doesn't give a shit. He just is an open racist. He doesn't give a fuck. But he'd also say the thing that he wants to say. Whereas the contemporary American corporate culture, you cannot just be direct. You have to dance around it. You have to caveat everything with pleasantries, and you have to caveat everything with, like, well, this is just like what I think, my opinion, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can't just be like, this is what I want. Like, what do you got? Can you give it to me or not? Yeah.
But so, do you think that Josh was dancing around the issue? I feel like he was playing his own separate game by testing, seeing, he wanted to see what the real intricacies of their relationship was. And there was no other way for him to do it, I think, than the way he did it. And I think he was also interested in Logan's stamina as a human being. Like, is this old guy really about to croak? Do I need to park my money here with him and his literal dying ways? Or should I jump over to Stewie and Sandy, which, you know,
totally. But his method of doing it is fits with, you know, that his generation of,
oh yeah, of course,
people. Like, you know, if say the positions were reversed, like Logan would have a completely different tactic to get the same outcome, you know?
Right.
And I do think it is an open question. I mean, I one of the kind of funny things about the episode, and Adrian Brody played it beautifully, where it's like, I mean, maybe he did get lost, You know, he has like that hilarious line
no
where he's like,
way. No you think way. So? I mean, bro.
He could be just like some billionaire
the
shithead.
Island.
Dude, do you understand who these billionaires are? Like, they don't fucking, you know, they're like, they're so pampered by everything that, like, if they're out on their own, like, they're not like outdoorsmen, you know? Like, right. It could be like, you know, he has that like hilarious line where he's like, this is a shortcut, but sometimes it takes longer.
Sometimes it takes longer.
Which is just absolute horseshit. Like,
of course, but like it could be that he was just genuinely lost. Like, that's possible.
He also said he was going to call the carts like 75 times.
It's, yeah, yeah. I don't believe it.
Exactly what he was doing, and you know why he knew what he was doing? Because he was talking to Stewie. Stewie's like, make the old man walk 5 miles, and then you'll get your answer.
Yeah, I think he was more in line with like Lawrence from Walter. Who's like playing them, you know, like at every turn, like the way, even the way that he told Logan, like, you think I'm some guy who got lucky at the casino one night, you know, and he kind of wants to show his intellectual dominance and gamesmanship over Logan, who feels like, yeah, I came from the old school motherfucker. Like, the way I talk and the way I do shit, run shit. And he's trying to show Logan a thing or two, like, no, you think I'm just some, you know, dumb motherfucker like your son, or what, you know what I'm saying? One of his friends, you think I'm one of your son's friends, like a black mama would say, like, you think I'm one of your little friends. And it's like, no, I have my own island, my own intellect. I built this whole thing. You here on my time. And that's the game that it seemed like he was playing to me.
Yeah.
And Maze.
Yeah. Well, the thing about this episode is that it didn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it doesn't really matter.
It was pumped up to create more drama, the whole walk thing, the health scare, but they're not treating it like a real health scare because they don't want to play that card yet, because that was season one, right? It's like, oh, he might just drop dead at any moment. And then we pretty much backburnered that the rest of the time. This was the closest we've gotten to anything like that.
Yeah.
But what you were saying about Logan kind of keeping it real and just getting to the point, the only other character that we've had that really does that is Stewie. He doesn't get a lot of time, but Stewie is direct as fuck, and he doesn't cut any shit with Kendall. And that's why I'm really excited for next week when we get the shareholder meeting. We get everybody in the same room.
Yeah, no, that's going to be exciting. I saw, I don't know if you guys saw the preview for the next episode.
I did. Yeah.
I mean, the most alarming thing has to be like Sandy in this chair situation.
Right. Yeah.
Did you guys see that?
I'm wondering what's going on. I've been wondering since we didn't see him in episode two, when they just say that he's there on the screen. We don't even get any acknowledgement from him. Like, something's going on with that guy. Yeah. And that's why they brought in Hope Davis as his daughter with the exact same name.
Right.
Yeah. So it strikes me as like a invalid type of situation. And that's going to play a part in all of this.
Did you guys notice the throwaway line that Greg said that I've been thinking about it like nonstop, like what he was talking about, but that when Logan offers Greg the deal and he puts the paper in front of him, and Greg says like, I need to check with my lawyer first. His name's Pew. Yeah. I can never get him. I can never get in touch with him during the day. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that he's like up all night and like drinking or something, and that he just like sleeps all day or something? Like, what?
I don't know. I couldn't understand. It was funny, but
he
I couldn't
not
understand.
Have a phone.
Right.
Take mail only.
What does that mean?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Jake had a good point to me that he made, which is that's probably just Greg bullshitting because he doesn't like to commit to things in the moment.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure.
Except also, I would believe that Pew only responds to telegrams 48 hours later. Like, I would believe anything for that guy.
Yeah. But I wonder how this is going to come back on Greg. Like, I'm with Nando. I don't believe that he signed that paper either. I mean, he went through all the trouble of going to his grandfather, having him, you know, vouch for him and get a lawyer for him. I don't think he would just automatically bow down to Logan and sign a piece of paper and basically close the book on this whole situation. Like Logan said, he has leverage in this situation. So, it would seem like he went through a lot of trouble for just another job at Waystar without, you know, talking to his grandfather. I don't think he signed it. I think he probably told Shiv that he, you know, intends to drop it off somewhere or something. And I think that's going to continue to be a storyline through the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that he probably signed it and I think he probably took the job, but I don't think he's going to end up doing that because then he wouldn't be in the show. So there's got to be another shoe to drop with that. And I think just the thing with him and Tom is that they both have other lawyers that they've been talking to. Tom makes that phone call that we still haven't picked up on. We don't know what he's doing there. Greg has this guy, Pew, that apparently lives in an ivory castle that you can't reach during the daytime. They both have moves to make. I'm still waiting for people to jump sides more often. Because right now, you know, like Logan says, Kendall's all alone. You're all alone right now. That's not going to stay the same. That's going to change.
When Greg ordered the rum and Coke, I could not stop laughing.
Okay.
I
was like, can we get Greg a Coca-Cola?
Yeah. I was like, that's such a funny, you know, like, because, like, again, it is old school to offer someone a drink in, like, a business meeting. Like, you just don't do that anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, Greg would just have no idea. Like, usually he'd be like, yeah, just give me, like, a whiskey, neat, you know? Like, I'll fucking clock it back in one sip. But he's like, yeah, rum and Coke.
And he's holding the glass with two hands. It's like a little tumbler. Yeah. He's holding it with two hands. Yeah. No, his physical comedy is great. I mean, shout out to Nicholas Braun because everything that he does with the character, even the wiping of the book, the top of the book.
Because he never goes there.
So everything that he does with Greg is just amazing. I love it. And then the chug at the end, and then that led to a great line where
that was my favorite line of the episode.
Okay.
He was like,
the better times,
not for all.
Not for all.
He's like, yeah, I don't know how you guys did it in the 60s, man, you know, like it's just a different time. Yeah. Better time
times,
not for all.
that was a great scene. Roman had not a lot going on. You know, he had the B plot of the episode.
Tattoo
man. I mean, I think Jerry pointed out a good point to him, which is something that would be common sense to most people. But, you know, for her, she's just like, it is like babysitting. And she's like telling this grown man, like, so you don't realize how this could come back on you. You were there. I'm sure you were directly involved in this situation.
Yeah.
And he's just like, huh? No, we want to bring down Wokahanas. And it's like, bro, this is just as much as your bullshit as it is his.
That's another relationship that is like kind of veering onto a collision course in that, you know, Roman thinks they have an understanding that Jerry's clearly like not understood. Like not abiding by, you know, like he thinks they have this like a relationship, you know, like it's weird, but like it works for him and, you know, it just does not work for her. And now that she's CEO, she constantly is sticking her hand out and keeping him at arm's length. And he thinks it's all part of like their weird little game, you know, and he's not realizing like, no, she's looking out for herself and she wants to be CEO. If it's with him, that's fine, you know, but like, if it's not, that's also fine. You know, like that line that she says, which again, if to get to the top levels of corporate America, you have to be like an absolute psychopath. But, you know, it's like, you have to constantly be asking yourself, how does this benefit me right now? You know,
tattooed on your head. Yeah, that was my line of the episode because that's kind of just the name of the game, man. Like that is
the name of
the
game.
Whole thing. It's almost like chaos is a ladder, Littlefinger type ethos. It's like that is succession. Look out for number one and just try not to get burned too bad on the way.
I don't know. So who do we think won the week?
I got two answers for you, Jason.
Yeah.
Number one, continually winning despite barely being on the show, Stewie.
Yeah.
Does that come to an end next week? We'll see. What's going to happen there? I'm excited. Number two, Tattoo Man. That's a win, man. You guys.
he got $1 million.
Humiliated 15 years ago. Now he's got $1 million.
Yeah,
you know? I was gonna say $1 million. I'm just gonna say it. that scene was great. You know, like just the again, like the psychopathy of these people. He does not give a fuck. You know, and this guy's like trying to preserve his dignity. And again, like under capitalism, there is no dignity to preserve. We would do almost anything for $1 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if it was just like, it was just personal humiliation. It wasn't like, you know, have to kill someone or anything like that. Like, it's just like, we would do almost anything. We would humiliate ourselves to almost any degree for $1 million, because that's just the kind of system that we live in.
Yeah.
And it's $1 million for a photograph that they're not even going to use.
Right. Yeah. And you already got it erased from your head. So, you know,
and what's you can get a better tattoo removal now, because it's still a little bit there. Now you can get it completely gone. Or you can get like a killer hairstyle because he's always playing with his bangs, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Who won, Jason? Who you got?
I mean, I had to give it up to Greg. It seemed like he was the obvious winner of the week. You know, like, he's got Logan eating out of the palm of his hand, telling him he's got leverage. He's effectively shitting on Tom, you know, having Tom embarrass himself. You know, at the beginning, Kendall kind of gives him his blessing, which, you know, that's a great situation. So he's not really creating funk with anybody, but he's moving up the ladder pretty peacefully. You know, so
the experience economy is maybe where it's at.
Right.
Yeah.
Buffalo Tier 2 Park.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he dropped one of the greatest lines of the show, I mean of the week, when he said, "That's not an IP that I'm familiar with," in response to Greg's Nero and Sporus comment. And also, if I had to give a secondary winner, it's Lori, the gentleman who's ex-DOJ, who's dating Jerry. Congrats to him.
Yeah.
Montgomery Clift.
Back channel him in the parking lot, or what happened?
Who's back channeling Jerry in the parking lot this week? Good on Lori.
Yeah, I'll keep my footwear on.
Dude, just put, like, I don't care if you're dating Jerry for real or not. Wear shoes and socks at work. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Nando, who's your winner?
Probably Adrian Brody's character, you know?
Yeah. He got King Kong to come out and dance with them. Yeah.
Yes,
got
he did.
King Kong. See, the thing is, like, and they dropped like little hints that Adrian Brody, not just, you know, he also had like a personal kind of desire to show that he, to make them grovel to him, because they probably made him grovel at some point, or they probably made him feel small. You know, he's like, you know, you probably think I'm some dipshit who got lucky in a casino one night. And now look at you, you know, you're fucking out here in my thing. I'm making you walk and you're making me and I'm making you grovel. You know, that must have felt pretty good to him. I mean, again, it's a lot of these things are about like power plays, you know? And yeah, he lied to them about his daughter being sick, but he got him to come to him. You know, which is like a thing, you know,
it's
because
like, am I coming desperate to you?
Yeah,
exactly. Like, am I coming to you or are you coming to me? You know, like, how many shows have you seen? Like, oh no, he's coming up to my office. Like, no, he's coming down to my office. And it's like, we'll meet halfway, you know?
I think that was on Entourage specifically with Terrence and Ari. They had that back and forth. Yeah, no, I feel you though. He definitely punked the fuck out of Logan and Kendall, like both of them together. So
the other great moment, I mean, it's like, I've mentioned it before, but like, I just love like how well these writers understand the uber rich, in that they did not touch the clams. Like, I think
they never Adrian Brody eat had like anything. Yeah,
they never eat anything. They have the best food in the world in this like ridiculous setting, right? Like in the middle of nowhere, they somehow have people set up there to serve them food at a table on this cliff, and none of them touch it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. The best example of that was the summer house, when they go out there and there's the raccoon in the chimney, and you actually see them preparing all these lobsters and steaks and all this expensive ass shit. And Logan's like, nah, the stink is on it. Chuck it all. We'll order pizza.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I love how like they get the minutiae and the intricacies of the types of phone calls that Frank and Carl have with people, you know, like that conference call, and they're breaking everything down to Kendall, and Carl saying that they're on the razor's edge with Josh and, you know, all of the phrases that they're using to get Kendall, who initially, you know, was balking at the idea, you guys aren't going to railroad me, and all of that soft corporate language that they use to, you know, just needle at him. And then the secondary call when, you know, Frank calls him and he tries to kind of appeal to his ego. Like, I love how they get all of that stuff that moves the big power players, you know, like these little.
Lord Fuckleroy.
Yeah, exactly.
Lord Fuckleroy.
So, shit. Yes. So what are our best lines from this week?
I mean, I really liked the, like I said, the Greg, better time, not for all, but, there was this weird, I think it was in the first conference call. There was this weird, like, bird metaphor that they were all playing up against each other. And it wasn't making a lot of sense. Like, they were like just saying anything that came up, like, ooh, cock-a-doodle-doo, man. And he's like, well, I'm gonna,
yeah.
You're like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but that exchange, oh, I thought was
Greg, yeah. Sturdy. He's a sturdy birdie. Say it three times before the cock crows, brother. Cock-a-doodle-doo. Okay, knuckle up, big bird.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, cock-a-doodle-doo is a rooster, not a crow.
See, you know? Greg, like, is good at riffing. What do you mean? Right. He's great, exactly. With Kendall.
Exactly. But, like, I love, like, I mean, I'm sure the writers know that, but they're, like, making a mistake, quote-unquote, on purpose, where he's like, yeah, like, cock-a-doodle-doo. It's like, that's an onomatopoeia for a rooster, not a fucking crow. You know? It's great.
I mean, nice. I mentioned Jerry's key to succession ethos. I also like kind of the other one, which was Logan talking about how the line's always moving. There is no fucking straight line. There are no rules. Yeah, you just gotta play the game.
Yeah.
But
Shiv doesn't understand that.
Definitely not. She needs a lot of seasoning. She needs a lot of experience. She also needs to learn to not interrupt Carl and Frank on their fucking lunch break. Okay.
Yeah.
They only get an hour a day to eat food. Carl loves food.
He loves don't food fuck this with season. Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves nipple clamps and food. When they find your nipple clamps.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
And just because we haven't mentioned it yet, I'm going to say this one. When Ken is talking about his son, Iverson, I just bought him a giant fucking rabbit. So now he's like Googling where he can buy the world's biggest carrot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene, and I love just the little camera moment because, like, I didn't quite catch when I first saw it that he, like, told his woman, like, you know, bunny cam or something. And I was like, what?
Yeah,
and
rabbit then, like, cam. Jess, rabbit cam.
And then you see, like, just, like, his assistant just, like, on her knees holding up a fucking iPad to a bunny rabbit. She's, like, probably thinking that moment, like, I went to fucking Harvard, you know, like, because, like, of course, like, Kendall's assistant, he would only hire from, like, the tippity top, right? Like, I went to fucking Harvard, and now on my knees in some fucking rich asshole's insane apartment, holding up an iPad in front of a rabbit so that his shithead kid named fucking Iverson. You know, like, which is just like a perfect cultural touch point for Kendall's age. You know, like when he was 16 and Iverson was fucking, you know, practice. We talk about practice, man. Like, he's like, this fucking guy is awesome. You know, like, it's great. Yeah.
Huge shout out to Juliana Canfield, who plays Jess. She's doing so much with so little in this show. It's fantastic. Yeah.
I love how she plays that character. The same way we shouted out Fisher Stevens, who I just saw in the French Dispatch last week.
And Adrian Brody as well.
Yeah, Adrian Brody was great. They were both great. Fisher Stevens only had a small role, but they were both great in that. I think she does a great role with Jess. I mean, all of the little idiosyncrasies of her being an assistant, her hand movements, her diction when talking to Kendall, all the stuff that she does is really great. My favorite line came from a scene that we did not mention, which I laughed out loud when this scene happened, which was between Connor and Shiv. And he says, I recall my father was a nasty, racist, neglectful individual. What was it they used to say? No blacks, no Jews, no women above the fourth floor.
Yeah.
Like, that was just perfect because you always knew that Connor.
You think me spitting out Rioja is going to help me win the Rust Belt?
It was nice of him to concede this election, you know, but then to pivot to the next one. He's got to season up a little bit before then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, that was definitely my first favorite line of the episode. And then Tom saying, "What if I forget to burp the toilet wine?" Like, yeah. Yeah. that was really good too.
Yeah, Tom talking about that first very cold glass of white wine. I love
on
it.
An empty stomach.
I love it so much.
Yeah, that was great. So, you know, now we had some good scenes. Anytime Connor shows up, it's a ball for me. Like, they always give him something funny to play with. Alan Ruck is good as that character. So, so what do we see happening at the shareholder meeting, guys?
Somehow, some way, they're gonna keep close the deal. Them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is like
dramatic, though.
This is like a MacGuffin, you know, and we're like, we don't really understand what the proxy fight is about at this point, or like what it even involves, or like they're negotiating with them over what, you know, like it's not very clear what the fuck's going on. But we just know it's like a threat, and they're probably gonna have to resolve it to face the bigger threat of the federal government.
Yeah,
yeah. This is the mid-season climax, right?
Like,
yeah,
right,
we
exactly.
still have the end of season climax, whatever that's going to be.
Yeah.
But I'm just excited. I love Stewie. So if we get a whole episode of Stewie talking shit, it's going to be exactly what the doctor ordered. And yeah, I'm curious what's up with Sandy. Like, that's really a big cliffhanger on what's going on there.
Yeah. I think that's my biggest question, is what the hell is going on with Sandy? Why haven't they mentioned it? You know, how is that going to play into the battle? And also, like, we haven't heard from Marcia in a couple episodes, so I have a sneaking suspicion like she's going to poke her head back up. You know,
and you know, the first couple of seasons, I kept waiting for the Marcia hammer to drop
because
it seemed like she was. But I'm kind of off that now. I kind of think she's just there. You know,
right.
And I did love Logan being like, "Well, I have a wife to get back to, so if we could wrap this shit up, that'd be great."
Yeah.
I
don't know if you heard, Josh, but we reconciled. We're back together now.
Yeah. No, I hope we get some more Josh though. Adrian Brody was good as his character. He was a perfect asshole, and that's what this show is made of—perfect assholes. So another one added to the bunch. I love it.
Yeah, it's so beautiful here. It's fucking disgusting. This is
why. Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. That's your latest episode of Machiavellian Fucks, Season 3, Episode 4 of Succession. Fernando Vila, Jason Madison, Anthony Mays. We are out.